This is Base Case 017, Free Play Part 2. I'm your host, Phil. You know, on the last episode, I was getting into Stephen Nachmanich's book, Free Play. And within there, he has this chapter. And these chapters, some of them are very short, and some of them go on for a while. But he has this chapter on disappearing. You know, and it begins with a quote by Aaron Copland, the great American composer. And Copland said, "Inspiration may be a form of subconsciousness or perhaps superconsciousness. I don't know, but I'm sure that is the antithesis of self-consciousness." You know, this is more of that surrendering to yourself. It's the more of that forgetting the ego, you know, the more of being kind to yourself. Stephen begins, "For art to appear, we have to disappear." You know, more surrendering. I'm not sure if I've mentioned this story on my podcast because I've told it so many times to my students, but I remember the first time that I can distinctly remember myself disappearing, you know, and I was an undergrad, and a group of high school students had a combo, and they were getting ready for a performance, but their bass player couldn't make it to the rehearsal, and I got the call, "Would you come in and just sub, and just so that we can have this together?" So we're there in their mom's living room, right, and we're playing standards that I'd known pretty well at that point. And it became fun immediately because they weren't used to a bass player that played heads and took solos, and so immediately, I started feeling the disappearing part of my ego. You know, hey, what do these guys think? Obviously, they were going to like everything that I did, you know, and it felt good. And I left myself and played out, you know, without the subconsciousness, without the superconsciousness, without worrying, you know. Did I play some notes that I didn't want to play? Probably, but everything felt good because I wasn't thinking about me, and even the wrong notes were working, you know. Here's another quote from Stephen, page 51. "We have all observed the intense absorption of children in play, that wide-eyed concentration in which both the child and the world vanish, and there is only play." And children can do that because they're constantly, you know, losing their subconsciousness. They haven't even developed it yet. You know, grown-ups can do that in their work, too, you know. To quote Stephen again, "It's possible to become what you are doing. These times come when you poof, out you go, and there's only the work." You've felt that before, too. You don't get hungry. You don't know what time it is. You don't know how long you've been doing something. The effort becomes effortless. You know, the Buddhists have a word for it, samadhi. You know, and small children go into that state of samadhi, you know, constantly playing, engrossed in what they're doing, even dragging other people into samadhi at that point. It happens sometimes with my bass students in my studio, you know. The player will learn the head of a tune, and we play it together with a backing track over and over again. It's fun, and moreover, it's blissful. It's the fun part of music making that people forget about. We're just playing, you know. We're playing the melody. You know, I'll start taking some chances, so will the bass student. But the reality is we lose track of time. There's exercises for preparation for samadhi in that chapter, and check them out. It's about centering yourself. Now, there's another chapter that I'm close to, and it's called Simply Practice. And Stephen writes about the Western idea of practice, and that is, you know, it's more, it's so American, you know, we practice to acquire a skill, you know. I'm going to practice so I can be a better musician and get a job, right? You know, it's very much related to our work ethic, which Stephen says, which enjoins us to endure struggle or boredom now in return for future rewards. I'll play this scale through all 12 keys, and I hate it, but it's going to get me somewhere. And that's good, right? That's all right. But then there's the Eastern idea of practice, which is to create the person, or rather to actualize or reveal the complete person who is already there. You know, I think about that with that anecdote that I said about the student and I playing the head of something like Blue Bossa over and over again. You know, we're becoming the melody. We're becoming the bass player. Our personalities have left the building. We're just doing, you know. We've gotten so much into this that we've gotten into samadhi. Now, this is more of the Zen meditative state that I talked about in a previous episode, where I confused my yoga teacher one time with the term practice, you know, me meaning practicing bass and he meaning practicing yoga, you know, sitting, you know, meditating. But in the Eastern context, like my yoga teacher would probably confirm with me, everything is practice, you know, walking, cooking, etc. The process of self-actualization is taking place if you let it, you know. Now, for us as bass players, let's find it, you know, like major scales. Every player in my studio has to play them, you know. We start the lessons with them in most cases. They become mechanical after a time, you know. I put the metronome and they say, let's play it at 120 and eighth notes. And they can perform ascending and then descending on command through the cycle, you know, and other modes too. And then I'll say, hey, let's play them descending to start with. And it's like the scale becomes new again, you know. Suddenly they fumble through it and then they find it and it becomes something different, you know. And I say, okay, now the next step is to take the scale and let's make melodies out of those eight notes. You know, I recently saw a video of the great double bass teacher and pedagogue, Francois Rabat. He was talking about this, and he says he doesn't practice, that he plays, you know, and he plays scales in the morning, but he demonstrated on camera. He took a C major scale, and he played through the scale, but he did it rhythmically, and it was a melody, and it was unrecognizable as sort of this pedantic scale. It became playing music, and this is beneficial to us, most certainly, you know, and it's improv, too. Always improv it. You know, we're always improvising, right? You don't like the melody you made with the major scale? Try it again, you know. Stephen quotes Brahms. He says, that's a mark of an artist is how much he throws away, you know. Think about it. Think about how much we throw away when we're creating music, you know. We play a scale or we learn a head, and, you know, we're working on the head to now's the time, and there's something that breaks in there. That's the throwing away when we begin again, you know. Writers do it all the time. They're constantly revising and throw away. That's what artists do. Most of the stuff you play isn't where you want it the first or maybe even the 100th time. We're constantly throwing stuff away until we find what we want, until we can accomplish what we want. You know, when I'm practicing a piece or working through soloing over changes, it's nothing that I want to show off to people. You know, when I'm practicing, that's not what I want people, when I want people to hear me. You know, I tend to close the door to my studio and I move in on it, but I allow myself the ability to make myself, I allow myself the ability to lose myself. You know, I give myself that permission to not sound the way that I want when I'm working things out, because that's part of the process. And then that same chapter, you know, and this is something I talked about with students a lot, Stephen writes about tenemos. You know, it's Greek, it's the loosely translated, it's the play space, you know, and I'll quote Stephen. In ancient Greek thought, the tenemos is a magic circle within which special rules apply, in which extraordinary events are free to occur, you know. That tenemos is physically your rehearsal space, you know, where you practice at. You know, my studio at home is my tenemos. I'm free to create, free to be free about my creating. But let's look at it in another way. It's also our headspace too, you know, our tenemos, where in my head I've given myself special rules, and this is where I'm going to allow extraordinary events and allow them to freely occur. You know, I say, hey, I'm practicing. I'm being kind to myself. The mistakes are going to happen. Maybe the mistakes lead somewhere, and a lot of times they do. You've got to embrace them. But whether I keep them, I'm free to be free. You know, and these are ideas for melodies. These are ideas for bass lines. These are ideas for lecture topics. These are ideas for podcast episodes, tunes I want the combo to do, arrangements I want to write. All of this stuff. And I'm free to create because I'm free to throw out what I don't want to use. And that's the headspace, that tenemos that you want to get there. And there will always be something left to use at that point. Now I'm going to leave you with that. And in episode 3, I'll do a little bit more. Free Play is a huge book in a lot of ways. It's a small paperback, but it's loaded with ideas. I'll talk to you next time.